Mini-episode 1776 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 1776 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. Feeling very patriotic with this being number 1776, more so than the candidates for president this year made me feel, but nevertheless, it is time for our pre-election show that we are doing. Get some picks in here as well as the analysis, and we have two top shelf folks to talk about the election with here. Two folks that have been on many, many times over a period of time, but I don't believe they've ever intersected on the show prior to this. We have, as far as when we're talking politics, the guy who has been our most regular contributor over a period of time is the proprietor of the great site, epolitics.com, our great friend Colin Delaney, who works in the biz, runs the site, etc. I know he's a busy guy around election time, so appreciate him making time for us. Colin, it's been a while, but so great to have you back on, my friend. How you doing?
I'm very excited to be back, man. I started doing campaign work very seriously back in 2020, and I'm just coming off a four-week sprint to get several thousand online ads up in the right places. So, yeah, and I've been talking to a lot of people who are working on the ground, so I think I have a pretty good sense of where the Democratic campaign mind and machine are right now.
Oh, interesting. Well, we'll look to tap into that. And I know you've written extensively over the years, I believe, for Campaign and Elections magazine, yes?
Yes. I do a column on digital politics for them every couple of months.
Okay. All right. Wanted to make sure we got that out there as well. And one of our great friends who sometimes we've talked politics with him on the show. We've talked any number of sports topics, sometimes sports business, really kind of all over the place, sometimes the TV business, and certainly a great Swiss Army knife here in the FDH Lounge. Our FDH Lounge dignitary, Lloyd Carroll, he of Queens Chronicle and other fine bylines in the New York area, and Lloyd being, as he will describe himself, perhaps America's last remaining Rockefeller Republican. So, Lloyd, I know you're going to have some interesting takes here for the show. Thank you so much for being here as well.
My pleasure, Rick. Yeah, I'm the last member, I think, of the Ripon Society forever here. That's I'll go down with the, I feel like Dino here. I'm going to go down with the ship. You know, no white flag.
The Ripon
Society. Well, if
you're a Rockefeller Society
Republican, doesn't that mean you've got deep pockets, man? Can you help me out? Come on.
Lloyd was one of the little guys who voted for the Rockefellers back in the day, yes? they had quite a following amongst all economic sectors in the New York area here, I guess, back in the day. But you had a Ripon Society. Leave it to Lloyd to bring in those deep cut references here that we truly cherish in the FDH Lounge. And I will say, as I indicated to both of these guys here at the outset, I'm going to run through, and I know that, interestingly, Colin will take issue with my framing on this as being a race about negatives, but I'm going to get into and define this from my perspective, the baggage that both candidates are bringing here to the final days in the race. And it is a thing where I've broken it down to gigantic, large, and regular liabilities here at this point. And I have it with the Harris campaign, 3 gigantic, 12 huge, 11 regular. I have Trump with 1 gigantic, 10 huge, 7 regular. So pretty close, but I have Trump a little bit less on each of those than Harris. Here's how I see it. The ones that I see as being gigantic for Harris, running through these, and then we can kind of take it wherever you guys want to take it afterwards. So the gigantic liabilities, economy slash cost of living, border, and apparently losing the early voting, if you believe what's out there right now. The huge ones, crime, not being a real change candidate slash quasi-incumbent. That relates closely to Biden's unpopularity slash wrong track numbers in the polls. Mideast war splitting her coalition. Mideast war particularly hurting in Michigan. I'm breaking that one out as being separate because that's where it could really potentially come in. Changing demographics in Pennsylvania hurting her a little bit. Country certainly less woke than in 2020, I think most would agree. Weaker than she wants to be with black voters, weaker than she wants to be with Latino voters, weaker than she wants to be with men voters. I would say needs to win by 3 to 4 points because Trump has been undercounted the last couple of times anyways, and shockingly trailing in party identification at this point, which I would not have expected to be the case, but is. Just the regular size liabilities that to some, the Trump convictions appear politicized. Fear not, I have Trump's convictions as one of his own liabilities at an equal level. Poll trends appear to be breaking against her. Pandemic narrative has shifted from 4 years ago. Big non-union endorsements. Trump's stumbles in office not as well remembered. 12 of 16 years in power for the party. Hurricane management slash competence. This has maybe faded a bit, but a couple weeks ago was working against them in North Carolina. And most untested presidential candidate in many years. Trump's liabilities, gigantic. And this one covers an awful lot, but own worst enemy. As far as diarrhea of the mouth, potentially appearing to be senile a lot of times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just continually shooting himself in the foot. And that covers many different things, but I'm counting it as one gigantic liability. The large ones, not the younger or fresher candidate. Worse self-discipline than in 2020, which doesn't seem possible, and where he's, you haven't seen it as much in recent months, but there was like almost a solid 6-week freak out after Kamala became the candidate here, of where he was just, you know, losing his shiz constantly. His ego wants this to be a choice, not a referendum campaign, which is stupid. He harmfully denounced early voting, harmfully to his own side, although, again, that appears not to be working as well. He appears to have gotten away with that one. Way outpaced financially, very weak with women. On a related issue, the abortion issue really hurts. Election denialism hurts in Arizona. Should be less spread in terms of the popular vote and the Electoral College, which would work against him. And, of course, Tony Hinchcliffe in the MSG thing the other night here, and any Puerto Ricans in the swing states. Regular size liabilities, Harris doing better than Biden in terms of non-college-educated whites, Harris doing better than Biden in terms of college-educated whites. Both of those a little bit kind of weird, especially on the non-college side. He clearly lost the debate against Harris. His convictions hurt with swing voters. The House is more dysfunctional than the Senate, so if people are pissed off at Congress, they tend to take it out more on the Republicans these days than the Democrats. Could have some of his voters in North Carolina negated because of the hurricane. I'm hearing now that may not be as big of an issue, but the displacement, that happens squarely in the rural area that's strong for him. And the same thing in Georgia. So he may have displaced voters in both places who want to vote and aren't able to vote. That may not be as big of an issue as when I first started working on the list about a week or 10 days ago, but we'll see. So a lot of liabilities for both candidates. I want to start with you, Colin, in the sense that, again, like I said, you, when we were talking off air, you take issue with the very premise of this being a race that's defined by negatives. And I think that is so far from everything that we're hearing in the media and on podcasts and everything these days. You're really going to set us aside by making this point here. You're going to make us stand out. So go make the point.
Well, I don't know what you're listening to and what you're reading, but
all kinds of stuff.
That is not. Well, yeah, I'm just telling you from. I wasn't in the convention center. I was in Chicago, though, hitting events on the side. You know, through the campaign-related work I'm doing, I'm talking to, you know, people who are doing voter turnout in the states regularly. The Democrats, obviously, especially with groups like women, who are terrified right now, and not just younger women, but grandmothers and mothers of women, and the women in their sons' lives as well. So there is fear of Trump motivating, but I think you're completely missing the degree to which Kamala has unified and enthused the Democrats. 75, as we're recording this, 75,000 people on the National Mall last night, right? And it was positive energy, excitement. If you watch videos of her rallies, if you talk to her supporters outside, you see, or, you know, see reporters talking to her supporters outside, there is enthusiasm out there. There is also terror, right, for Democrats, for anyone who enjoys a constitutional republic. You know, there should be terror. But I think that saying it is simply about negatives is not nuanced enough. It is, the reality is more complicated. And, you know, you completely miss,
okay,
to me, Kamala's two biggest negatives.
What?
Which are the fact that she's a black woman. You know?
Well, the woman thing might hurt worse. Woman might hurt worse because
Who knows?
We've already had a black president. I will say this. And this is a thing where, again, I know that, like, women are quick to go to the whole thing of, like, internalized misogyny. But let me tell you something. I'm sure you've had enough conversations.
Let me just finish.
Oh, sure.
You know, I was reading an interview with male Latin voters on the ground.
Okay.
You know, earlier today. And one of the guys is like, I'm not going to vote for a woman for president, period.
Right.
You know, I don't think women are strong enough. When you hear, or when you, you know, pollsters talk about, or focus groups, they say, well, Kamala Harris seems weak. When you dig a little deeper, that's usually code for she's a woman.
Okay.
Right. So she has to overcome those obstacles in addition to any political obstacles.
Sure. Well, I was just going to say that, like, women, a lot of times, this is the thing when I've noticed this, like, in terms of talking to them, like, they may make a criticism of another woman where it's like, I didn't even notice that. And it's like, and that gets ascribed to cattiness or whatever, but I don't necessarily, I mean, sometimes it is, I'm sure. Or it's internalized misogyny, but I think sometimes women are just sharper about other women and pick up negatives that guys don't necessarily see. So I don't necessarily...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily believe the popular wisdom, you know, on that one there. But, you know, Lloyd, from your perspective, you know, how are you looking at it? Again, I know that, you know, most of the political conversations I've been with you, having with you over the years have been, and I would say two-way cynical between me and you, but it's like, I'd be very interested to hear you react to what Colin just said, painting such a oh-so-positive picture of at least one side of the landscape.
Well, I will say this, that given the way things look back in July for the Democrats, I think she's run as good a campaign as you can expect given the circumstances. Ironically, before all this happened, I used to always tell friends, I always felt the first female president would be a Republican. I guess, you know, obviously Nikki Haley comes to mind. I go back to even Margaret Chase Smith, but all right. My feeling on that was like a Nixon China thing. For whatever it was worth, that's where I always stood out. Again, that doesn't mean Kamala's not going to win next week, but that was always my gut feel on how I saw the you know, the gender issue with the presidency. As far as other things, I got to say, I always felt Trump was getting that momentum back for a while until, ironically, I'm here in New York, until Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
You know, that was, to me, that was the biggest risk of them all. And if things went really well at the Garden, you know, you could say Trump was the hero, came into his hometown, blah, 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 came into the Lion's Den, Blue State, New York. That would have been a big story. Unfortunately, this was handled so poorly. I mean, we'll obviously know about Tony Hinchcliffe. When you're going to have 20 speakers, that is 20 areas that can blow up in your face. I mean, it wasn't just Hinchcliffe. You had Crazy Sid Rosenberg making statements. Carlson was out there. I mean, the probabilities of trouble occurring. And it's funny, Trump himself, normally he's the guy who gets himself in trouble. He was actually pretty good on, but nobody remembers that. And all people are talking about was, you know, again, Madison Square Garden, because what happened in 1939, fairly or unfairly, you had all these Bunn references, coming from, again, I think liberal media, I think that was kind of unfair to Trump. I mean, let's face it, there's been plenty of Democratic conventions in Madison Square Garden. There's been a Republican convention. I covered it in 2004. I felt that kind of got a little overplayed, but unfortunately, Trump's surrogates wound up making that Bunn comparison look accurate, and it took a lot of momentum away from him this week.
Well, people like us who live in the media world, absorb the media, do think in terms of stories moving things. And I think with, you know, Puerto Ricans in America, or, you know, in the continental U.S. and can vote, I think it is actually going to move things. But if you look at a lot of the patterns, Rick, you were talking about, like the voter turnout patterns.
Yeah,
a lot of Republicans showed up to early vote in the first few days.
Right.
Almost all of whom had voted in 2020, right? These are not the occasional voters that Trump is trying to pick up. And, you know, the one of the great liabilities you didn't mention is the fact that Trump does not have a field campaign, period. The Democrats have spent 4 years, and not just in the battleground states, building a machine to turn out that 2 or 3% you need to win a close election. And that was already showing up in the early vote patterns, that as we move further into early voting in each state, the Democrats began to either narrow the gap or pull ahead through superior organizing, and, you know, they're motivated.
Well, yeah.
I do have to ask this to Colin. It seems like a lot of moderate Republicans have been helping the Harris campaign. I mean, the Lincoln Project guys, the Bulwark. Is that being appreciated by the blue team? And do you think Harris, if she does win, will keep that in mind in terms of how she governs and who she appoints to her cabinet? I just think that moderate Republicans have been kind of the unsung heroes, if you're looking at it for the whole Save Democracy, Go Blue team kind of for this particular election cycle. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on it.
No, I think it's a great question. And, you know, as always, it's going to depend. If you're a 22-year-old activist, you know, you're probably not too psyched about, you know, Republicans crossing over.
Lynn Cheney.
You're a purist. You're young. Yeah, you're young. You're a purist. The Harris team, you know, she's got Liz Cheney on stage. She's appearing on stage with these folks. Who knows what's going to happen? I think it would be, one, good for the country, and two, very politically astute of her to continue that. And she has said that she would appoint a Republican cabinet member, which, you know, is kind of a token, but it's still better than nothing.
Sure.
But, you know, somebody, you know, assuming she wins, which I think she's going to do more comfortably than it looks right now, that somebody has got to start, you know, providing a home for disaffected Republicans, people who have been turned away by what the movement has become, but need a place to go. And they're not really going to become Democrats. But if someone like Kamala, you know, can help raise some voices that help, you know, a sane alternative coalesce, again, I think that would be a great service.
Well, and I want to get back to something you said a second ago here, Colin, and I would say, you know, fair criticism on your part. I had this as sort of an unspoken sort of subset, but I probably should have broken it out on the whole thing about Harmley denounces early voting, that the entire organizational side, really, for the Republicans, and that is something where, again, based on what we're seeing with the early voting and what some of the patterns have been, really kind of surprisingly, and the party registration numbers really tipping the way they have, maybe the early buzz on that was wrong. But I had heard, as you had heard for so long, that it was going to be this whole, you know, amateurish thing of outsourcing it to Charlie Kirk's weirdos and all of them to basically handle all that kind of crap. So I do think when it comes to Election Day, I agree with you on that. I think that the Democratic machine is going to, you know, much as it always does in big cities, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But yeah, I think it's...
Hey, do not undermine faith in the Democratic process. I am not kidding. You know, those jokes aren't funny anymore, dude. They're not funny.
Well,
except they
kind of are. But it's a thing where, look, I would say, too, now again, on the whole thing about the denialism, I think that works against them, too. Because like, I can give you the example of my own dad, who he is just, he's probably going to do, I don't think he always makes fun of me for voting third party a lot of times, throwing my vote away. All I know is he's not voting for either of the two major candidates, and he would have voted for Trump. But the January 6th stuff almost completely swayed him to, I can't do that again. An alternative, if he were looking for one, let me give my own personal endorsement here to the American Solidarity Party, Peter Sonsky and Lauren Onak. That will be who I will be voting for here in the safe state of Ohio, where my vote doesn't even matter. There's only seven states in the country that really count. So I can be somebody who basically, when it comes to the issues, I would say would be far more on the Trump side. But basically, and that's where, again, I would say I differ with you, Lloyd, but not necessarily, because it's a thing where you are a true blue, dyed-in-the-wool moderate, and I am a paleocon Pat guy from the 90s, the old Buchanan Brigade. So it's a thing where, you know, you're not necessarily selling out your beliefs by voting for a Democrat. I kind of would be, because it's a thing where I can't bring myself to do that. I can't bring myself either to vote for, you know, the crazy guy who, again, January 6th, the way that he mishandled the pandemic, on and on and on and on and on. So it's very interesting. And that's where, again, all of us, I think, have the luxury of voting our consciences. I'm taking the option to do that here in the state of Ohio. Because are you still registered in Texas, Colin? Because if so, you can do whatever the hell you want either way.
No.
You're not? Okay.
No, I've been a D.C. resident for 27 years.
Oh, okay. So. I didn't know. Well, once again.
In the swing area?
Yeah.
I go back to Texas okay. for a... to help my parents.
Gotcha. The same thing applies. It's not like Trump's going to win D.C. By the way, what you said before about Kamala got 70,000 people to the mall. In D.C., stop the presses. Kamala is doing well in D.C., Colin. You could knock me over with a feather.
No. I live here. There's a crowd on the mall every weekend.
Yeah.
This was different. This was... people all day, hey, are you going? Are you going to go down there? And if somebody was going to go down there, people were excited. I don't go to big things like that. I don't want to deal with the crowds. But that is not normal. And a whole lot of those folks are, you know, going to be in from the burbs. You know, some of them probably came in all the way from West Virginia and Pennsylvania, you know.
It was all normies from the heartland. Honest, Rick. It was all normies from the heartland.
Yeah, dude. You know, your stereotypes do not necessarily reflect our reality.
I do want to ask Colin a question. We were talking about the winning coalition. And Colin mentioned something interesting about that 22-year-old activist. Do you think that Harris's biggest problem at this point may not even be Republicans or even Trumpers, but the key to victory might be these, I call the leftist stems who are actually kind of hurting the cause rather than helping it. Like you saw the Gaza demonstrators at the Ellipse. They never seemed to come out. They didn't come out to Madison Square Garden to protest. They didn't really come out to the RNC to protest. I just was wondering, and also when you watch MSNBC, it seems like they love to go for purity tests on the blue team. And I was curious if you think that has been probably a bigger problem that no one wants to talk about.
No, I think it's a very fair question and a good question. You know, again, the blue team consists of everyone from my 86-year-old mother to, you know, my 19-year-old lesbian niece, right? So... there is no monolith here. you know, the purists, the real purists, weren't really Democrats anyway. Like the Bernie Sanders people, you know, some of them were mad because the Democratic Party wouldn't let them take it over. You know, they wouldn't let Bernie do the same kind of hostile takeover of the Democratic Party that Trump did of the Republican one.
Correct.
You know, and so the real, real lefties weren't really going to be with us anyway, you know. There are, you know, I have friends who are still very passionate about Gaza. You know, friends of mine were organizers of the None of the Above campaign in Michigan. But in the long, you know, if you look at this, you know, Trump would happily bomb any place in the third world into dust just to do it. Right? He does not give a flip about bombing Gaza. And so a vote, you know, a vote that isn't for Harris is
you know, letting BP, functionally letting BP do whatever he wants. So I think, you know, another thing, you know, you talked about softness among Black voters, softness among Latino voters. People say one thing, but when you get into that ballot box, you know, when you get into the polling location and that ballot is staring you in the face, people can make a different one. I give the example of the French elections earlier this year, that the polling, and there are a couple of other elections in Europe too, polling showed the far right parties doing well, winning. But on election day, they got swamped.
Yeah.
And I suspect something similar is going to happen here.
I do have to ask another question, because we're talking about identity politics, different groups, that how we think they're going to vote. Is there a concern? I always thought that maybe because I'm based here in the Northeast, that Jewish voters were always one of the most reliable Democratic bases. You know, you go back to the FDR, the New Deal, baby boomers. It seems as if, and again, this is just looking from the side, watching MSNBC after October 7th, it seemed as if the left was enjoying rubbing the noses, Jewish noses in the dirt, of their most, one of their most loyal bases. And watching MSNBC, I thought these guys were going to high-five each other after October 7th. It just seemed there was a lot of gratitude, a lack of gratitude, and also seemed to be at the time that perhaps the Democratic Party is working hard at making Jews as Republicans as Florida Cubans. I didn't quite get that, but maybe you could explain that to me.
Yeah, again, don't watch cable news. No, I'm being very serious. If you want to understand American politics...
But you watch the Democratic leaders come on cable news. It's not just Joy Reid, who I think I'm personally entertaining. But, I have to admit that.
But has Joe Biden been sending bombs to BB? Yes, right? The American administration is firmly behind Israel, for better or for worse, depending on how you feel about that, right?
Sure, but Trump is also making hay of the college demonstrations that have not been really addressed by the Democratic Party. Even by Kamala, she's been very weak in that area.
The Democratic Party is not running a university. Those people are not representing the Democrats, right?
Perception is that it's the left, and it does kind of blow back on the blue. I hear what you're saying, Colin, but I'm just talking about perception over reality.
Well, that is not the perception I pick up. And again, I spent a lot of time around lefties, right?
They're
typically, you know, except for the ones who are so want to burn down the system that they don't, you know, that they don't care. You know, they're almost Trumpers. Except for them, almost all these folks are either going to stay home or vote for Kamala.
Well, okay. And I have to ask you about this too, Colin, in terms of Michigan. Yeah. And, you know, and again, we can talk all day long about, you know, the shamelessness of Trump. Yes, and today's another day where the sky is blue also at related news. But it takes a special kind of ineptitude to let him get away with the way that he is triangulating in Michigan. He's picking up, like, Palestinian mayor endorsements. Are you kidding me? Because I go back to the same thing you said before. Now, I will say that, again, his foreign policy, generally speaking, you know, more on the non-interventionist side, but it's always been, it's a split personality when it comes to Israel and Iran, because he's willing to go after Iran to a degree that makes me queasy, and he's willing to give Israel a blank check to a degree that makes me queasy. Aside from that, aside from him being incoherent on a few things, he's generally non-interventionist, but I agree with you. It's not out of fear of bombing brown people. It's not out of any, but it's, I think it's more just a fear of getting enmeshed in something that's going to be messy for him. So it's a thing. So he has no moral objections whatsoever to what Israel is doing and what Biden is letting Israel doing, and he is successfully triangulating the Harris campaign in Michigan to a degree that I think between that and the way that she is not, I think she's underperforming among the union voters. I think those two things will prove decisive in Michigan. For him, her to let him get away with that is sheer incompetence.
Can I tell you that the head of the Michigan Democratic Party, with whom I was on a Zoom call this morning, does not feel that they're being out triangulated. And I see a level of confidence. They, you know, are never going to say what they think is going to happen. But I've worked with them three election cycles now, and I have never seen the kind of quiet confidence that I see today.
Oh, the party leader told you it's not true. Okay.
Gee, Colin,
I didn't know that the party leader told you it wasn't true. Okay, so now I'm convinced.
Now, the Michigan Democratic Party is an absolute turnout machine. They are extreme. They won, they flipped the state house in the red wave midterms that were so red wavy. They've been demonstrating how to govern in a state that had, people like Rick Snyder in charge, right? The Mr. Let's Poison Flint to save a few bucks.
Yeah, now we got the midlife crisis governor in there being a barfly, so that's wonderful.
Oh, don't you mess with my girl Gretchen, boy. I'll be after you. No, she's cool. I've never met her. But no, I'm just saying that, we talk about triangulation, blah, blah, blah. Union guys are going for Trump for the same reason that working class guys are going for Trump all over the country. It's more of a cultural affinity than anything else. Trump's rich, but he's the outer borough, that guy that the elites always look down on. That's how he portrays himself. That's how he sees himself. And he's been able to tap into that kind of grievance. I think it's more elemental than a political message. I think it is like a deep cultural resonance.
Well, let me just point this out, because this is something I heard this morning. One of the things that I'm checking out here keeps popping up in my YouTube algorithm, and I learn a lot from listening to it, is that daily show that Mark Halperin is doing with, there's a Democratic consultant and also Sean Spicer. So they're giving their...
You mean the
two-way.
The most failed Democratic... Oh,
you're talking to Halperin, the reporter. Okay. Yeah, the reporter. Yeah, it's a Democratic fundraiser.
Among the most wrong people ever.
Well, he's got a Democratic consultant on from Pennsylvania to provide the point of view. And this guy said, I know the congressman, but I won't betray the confidence for saying this, that there was a Democratic congressman in Michigan that was saying that one of the problems with the union voters is they're giving Trump a lot of credit, that even though I don't think the NAFTA renegotiation solved a whole bunch of things when Trump was in office, just the fact that he tried, and the whole thing of like, well, the neoliberals when they were in previously didn't even try. So basically the trade according to this guy, the trade issue is helping Trump with the union people.
Well, I'm sure it is. But here's another thing. People are very good at finding rationalizations for decisions they want to make anyway.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes why people say they want to vote for someone or vote against someone isn't necessarily what's really motivating them, but is really psychologically useful to have something to hang your hat on.
Well, okay.
That
makes sense as a theory, certainly. I will say this, something that I know from talking to Lloyd off air, and we'll get his point of view on this as well, but it's something I believe that you're going to take issue with.
Sorry to suck up all the airtime. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but I Lloyd knew I was going to do this here too, because we want to hear your reaction to this. One of my theories of the case here in terms of the landscape and the way that it is, and I can't possibly see that you're going to agree with this, is that I believe that the way that the wind has been blowing over a period of time, because you talked before about the Bernie people, and I really kind of trace the ascendancy of the left. I'll go a little further back. I'll say probably Ferguson in 2014, I think, is when it really started kind of showing up. It sort of crested with that Bernie wave. I think the disunity that there was on the Democratic side is one of the things that paved the way for Trump to win. And then I think, again, it was pretty much full bore through the course of the presidency that Trump had. And that's one of the things, too. And I said when Biden came into the office, I was on a segment with Lloyd and with William Cohen, now of Puck. And I said at the time, and I was right, I said, everybody always says, oh, Biden's this big moderate, whatever. I said, no, he always goes to the center of gravity in the party. And the center of gravity in the party is now on the left. And I think that's where he's going to be. And you look at the way that the last couple of years have played out, and the big spending and the whole thing of like his entire border policy was nothing but a reaction to what Trump did and trying to outflank Trump on the, quote unquote, humanitarian side and everything like that. Long story short, the breeze, I think, is blowing the other way on this. And the fact that Kamala is having to run defending herself on the border and on being an inflation fighter and all these other things like this, I think a lot of this is being fought on Trump's terrain, because I think the pendulum, which had been swinging in American politics for many years one way, is swinging back as a result of the Biden administration. And I think that's one of the things that's put her on the defensive. So go ahead and tell me why you think I'm wrong, Colin.
Oh, okay. Well, for one thing, the border is the issue it is because right-wing media talks about it 24 hours a day, right? There is nothing like this in recent American history. The sense that you have this closed media ecosystem that can pick, you know, a handful of stories, handful of themes, and just hammer them. You know, as we saw the other day, the Washington Post is not an arm of the Democratic Party, but, you know, all the talk about horrible crime when crime was falling by, violent crime is falling by 25%, right? The talk of the flood of people on the border. Well, the big problem with all the people coming to the border, is they are legally allowed to do if they're going to try to get asylum, was that we have not funded enough staff to be able to handle them. We haven't funded enough administrative judges to be able to handle the whole thing. And when there was a true bipartisan attempt to fix it, Trump killed it so that he could have a campaign issue to run on. So, you know, you can, yeah, Biden, you know, you can talk about what you think his political motivation was, but there is a reality that people are showing up on the border, and it is U.S. law and treaties that we have signed that says if someone is requesting asylum, we have to consider it. And yet, the agency has been starved of money by the Republicans.
Well, so
you know, you want to talk about, yeah, she's got to deal with the border, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, the border's doing okay right now.
Crossings
are way down, et cetera.
Lloyd, let me start by giving you an interpretation there. All those migrants you're seeing around NYC, that's just Russian disinformation, apparently.
Eric Adams wishes it was Russian disinformation.
Yeah, LA handles that many people coming in a weekend, right? Eric Adams made that.
You know what? I got to give I have to give Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis a lot of credit when they got the buses and the planes coming into New York. At first, Adams, well, they have to, we're going to welcome these people, and then they knew what they were doing. They flooded, and now even good old you see, New York State is not as blue as people think. It's more competitive. I know that. It doesn't appear that way, but even the gubernatorial election 2022, Kathy Hochul barely beat Lee Zeldin, and four districts flipped because of her inept campaign. And this was going back 2 years ago, before the real crisis hit. It was more just generic crime, her being soft on. But having said that, I was thinking about this border issue, and maybe Colin can explain to me, but it seems like Bill Maher is the only person who's ever asked this question, because I think both parties are responsible for the border issues. And it's as simple as this. How come nobody ever talks about this, including the blue team? Why aren't employers being prosecuted who hire illegal aliens? If you really want to, you know, stop the flow, stop the follow the money. But that never comes up as a topic of discussion for either Republicans or Democrats. Why aren't the employers being prosecuted?
Actually, Kamala talks about that a lot. You know, to me,
it hasn't really gotten through. It's been muted.
Yeah,
I don't think she has. It just has gotten played.
Again, the Washington Post and the New York Times are not arms of the Democratic Party. It is very hard for Democrats to get a message out right now. Kamala Harris, as of a month ago, had spent like $10 million on Facebook ads coming from some newsy-looking Facebook pages, but that had, you know, they were campaign, you know, they were their campaign disclaimer. But they were just highlighting positive local news stories because nobody covers them. You know, I've worked on projects that were just highlighting local infrastructure projects that have been funded by the Biden bill, because there's no more local newspaper to tell anybody about these things, right? It's really hard to get a message out. And you talk New York. Do not start me to talking about the New York Democratic Party. If the head of that party, who Hochul has kept in, if he spent a tenth of the time, he spends 90% of his time trying to keep more liberal Democrats out. not.
Are you talking about my old high school buddy, Jay Jacobs? All right.
Are you serious? Serious? What was he like in high school?
Jay was the head of the Marshall squad. I worked with him. Actually, he was Jay was a fun guy. I ran into him recently, a couple of years ago, and he's an old ward boss and proud of it. He got a kick out of it. He's like the only Republican you think he knew in Forest Hill. So we got fine. We got along fine. But Jay is into winning and. He understands that New York is not Berkeley. I mean, it's a myth. He gets the fact that Long Island, a lot of even just the outside of the five, sure. Actually outside of the four boroughs, Staten Island is as red as any other part of is Wyoming when you get to it. He understands that, and he has to kind of thread a very tough needle here. And I think he's been relatively successful at doing that.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
I'm looking for a Republican candidate, but simply pointing out that he's actually been able to thread a needle, maximize Democratic success, knowing that the extreme left is probably a bigger threat to Democratic victories than the red team is.
I'll tell that to AOC.
there's a candidate who never leaves the South Bronx. They call it South Bronx Party.
That's okay. That's okay, man. Y'all can dismiss her all you want. I will call her Madam President in 20 years.
Okay, Madam President. Maybe Bronx Borough President.
You want to put, $20 on it right here?
Yeah, I'll put money on that one.
At the rate we're sliding down the crapper in this country, possible. Could happen.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll just do very well.
Well, in the nearer term, in looking at this here, I want to make sure we get our picks in here before the end. I'm looking at this here. I'll stick my neck out first. Based on the trends that I have been seeing, so out of the seven states here, I give Trump the edge on the four southern states. The northern ones are really, 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 it seems like, on the biggest razor's edge. At the end of the day, I have a feeling, maybe I'm buying the hype too much on the Hinchcliffe thing, but 500,000 Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania, so I think that could be decisive there. Between Michigan and Wisconsin, I have a harder time seeing Trump take Wisconsin. For the reasons I said before, I think with Michigan, the issues, with the unions, Arabs versus Jews, et cetera, I think... By a razor's edge, I think Trump takes that, and I think that's decisive. That puts him, I think, at 283. So that's my pick. And so, Colin, go ahead and tell me why you think I'm wrong.
Well, I tell you, I think it's I don't think we know nearly enough. There are not enough state level quality polls to really understand what people are thinking. And remember, every poll is based on someone's assumptions about turnout, right?
Sure.
I think that rather than think of the states individually, my suspicion is they're all going to go one way or the other, right? I think there's a late break, and I think it's going to be for Kamala. But of course, certainly could be for Trump. But I think there's a late break that the late undeciders, much like in France this summer or spring, that they go at the last minute. But the Democrats are going to be dragging every friend and family member they have to the polls.
Some of them will actually be alive. Some of them will be live people. So that'll be worth watching.
good. Continue to undermine confidence in our democracy. That's ended so well lately.
Well, by the way, Colin, I will say, what you're saying is it basically lines up with James Carville's theory of the case, and it's a thing where maybe I'm in the weeds too much because of how much I'm reading and I'm looking and whatever, but I don't get the sense it's going to be 7-0 either way, because I think that it's going to be, there's this factor in this state and this factor in this state and this, so I get the sense it's going to be more state by state, not that it's going to necessarily be 4-3, because I have it being, I think, 5-2 Trump, but it's a thing where it just happens to work out that way. But not because I necessarily believe it could be 7-0 one way or another, or 6-1 one way or another. Yeah,
well,
but I just maybe I'm just too much in the weeds.
I didn't necessarily mean 7-0.
No. But
like
I mean
6-1.
There's Carville was saying that, and that means it's a serious theory. But it's just And again, it depends on whether you believe that, or like I said, maybe I'm just too much in the weeds of the micro trends of the different states and how they differ and everything like that. So we'll see. But Lloyd, let's see if you think it's going to end up where you want it to end up. Do you think it's going to?
Well, let's see. I think the Puerto Rican thing in Pennsylvania, you know, maybe it's recency bias, but it's not just, you know, what Hinchcliffe did that's going to, I think, hurt Trump. I think the whole Madison Square Garden, you know, it was not a garden party for Trump, all due respect to late Rick Nelson. It was not a garden party. But what made it, I think, really hurtful is there's been, up until this point, I think a lot of Trump nostalgia. It seems like people forgot the pandemic, and we're thinking, 2017, 18, 19, those were fun times for the pandemic. It was almost this, like, a fog, a bit of Trump nostalgia. Those were good times. And I think that Madison Square Garden rally reminded people of, well, maybe they weren't such great times after all. And I think that's going to be one of the factors that may break against Trump as we head into the final. Now, of course, it's also a geography bias because I'm in New York and that's where the garden was. I think that Harris probably will squeak by in Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro, and there's still a pretty good Democratic machine over there. I think Al Schmidt, who's a Republican, is not going to tolerate any nonsense in terms of the way the voting goes. He's in charge of the state. He's basically the Secretary of State over there. Wisconsin, I'm surprised that it sounds like even you're conceding, Rick, that Harris is doing better than I would have thought you'd do over there.
Yeah, I just
in Michigan, as Calvin pointed out, always seems to, maybe it's the abortion issue, and they seem to be able to be on a pretty good run, the Denver. They seem to win the close ones there, like Gary Peters' Senate race. So I think those three, the old blue wall, I think will hold up. Now, what's more interesting is North Carolina, where we did talk about the anti-coattails effect of Mark Robinson, who's clearly going to get beat by Josh Stein.
Right.
Does that suddenly, you know, create a halo effect for Harris in North Carolina?
I would doubt it.
I don't know.
You're going to have a lot of ticket splitters there.
I'm just throwing it out there.
It is a
factor that normally you wouldn't think about. I don't see Harris being able to duplicate what Biden did in Georgia. Kemp is done well. There's no real. Stacey Abrams kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. I think that one will go to Trump. I think Nevada will eventually. Is that one of the seven that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Nevada, one of those swing areas?
He appears to be trending up there.
Harris will probably eke that out.
Oh, okay.
Arizona is kind of also. Normally, I would agree with you on. But the fact that Lake is getting blown out in that Senate race
right.
by Diego, everybody thought that was going to be up for grabs. And I wonder again if there's, you know, if that could have a reverse coattails effect. But if you say not, well, then I'll go with you that troubled squeak out Arizona. So there's some interesting dynamics here based on the Senate that could, you know, come into play.
Lloyd, I'd like to know who thought Carrie Lake was going to run strong in Arizona. I don't think anybody thought she was going to run strong there. I will say this. I go to with Michigan. To me, it's one of the fundamentals of American politics is that disunity is death. And as far as the Mideast War, which again, like 1968, really having a chance to split the Democratic coalition, then it did so nationwide. Here it appears to be centered in Michigan. That is the epicenter of the backlash to the Biden administration over Israel's, I would say, war with Gaza, but now it's wars with, you know, a good chunk of the Middle East and the way that that's going.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I think we haven't seen the effect of that in the ballot before now.
But I do have to ask Colin this question. Colin, we're talking about the left and the Democrats. Do you think Gaza's been overplayed as a big... Now, we're not talking about Jews and Muslims. We're talking about just most Americans where they don't have a dog in the race. Has Gaza been overplayed as this big election that's on the minds of voters? I mean, I find it hard, again, if you're not a stakeholder, to really believe it does. So I'm just curious if this is an... I know you're going to say this, an MSNBC fabrication.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say fabrication, but, you know...
Overplayed.
You know, yeah, media exists to sell advertising, right? If it bleeds, it needs, because that commands attention. Actually, if you want to talk a divided house in Michigan, talk about the Michigan Republican Party.
Sure. Okay.
Member, yes, as, you know...
Fair enough.
Taken over by a hardcore Trumpy, run
Fair
off
enough.
The road, lawsuits ensued. Yeah. Again, you know, listen, the passions of people when it comes to Gaza, those are perfectly legitimate and real. But as an election issue for the majority of Americans who, you know, might be swingable, I don't think it really registers that
much. That was my thinking on this, too. Just, again, yeah. Looking at taking a side, not which side I'm rooting for, but how big is it overall for somebody who's not a stakeholder? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, one last question that I have, and it's one where, again, I like to, whether it be on sports or anything else, I like to be able to pose the questions that nobody else is even bothering to pose. So the whole thing here, too, I was seeing it again the other day with Kamala's rally, you know, running on the whole freedom thing. Very disparate in terms of, you know, Democrats doing that. People tend to think in this country, first and foremost, free markets, the gun people, right? My guns. Democrats make fun of gun owners for, you know, talking about freedom and everything like that. She's running on freedom for one issue. But it's one of those things where if you're talking about economic freedom / the free market or any of these other things like that, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's hurting her because I don't think we're a sophisticated enough country for that to come back and bite her. But it's like, I'm a little weirded out seeing a Democrat running on freedom with, you know, big government being in ascendancy over the last couple of decades. I don't know, Colin. You'll probably say that's just me.
Well, yeah, that just tells me how much the conservative corporate notion of freedom has been allowed to take over, okay. Right? Democrats believe deeply in freedom. You know, I think a campaign
can you name
is
one aside
wrong.
From abortion? Can you name one? I mean,
yes, the freedom to fall in love with whomever you choose, the freedom to send your kids to school without worrying about them taking a bullet in the head.
Well, all the libertine right? things are all related, so.
Yes, yeah, school shootings very have a lot to do with libertine. Yes, no, Democrats believe they don't want, the Democrats don't want the religious right telling us what to do, and we don't want big corporations telling us what to do.
But big right. government and big labor, it's okay, right? So.
Well, the government is us. We are the government. The government is not this other entity. We create it. We okay. staff it. Now, I mean, again, this is, you know, all the way back to Goldwater. This is 70 years of a messaging machine trying to separate, you know, basically the, well, on a slightly different note, I can't tell you how offended Democrats are that the Republicans have tried to, that the Trumpies, but you go back to W. Bush and it was the same thing, USA Patriot Act.
Okay.
But that Republicans, in our eyes, have cynically manipulated patriotism and tried to steal it as only Republicans are patriotic.
Okay.
Right? You look at 2002. A veteran, Max Cleland, U.S. Senator, they tarred him as being un-American for voting against the creation of the Department of Homeland Security because he thought it was going to be a disaster, and it is. But they tarred him as un-American and ran him out of office, right? The Republican, the right wing, I would say the conservative movement, not, you know, individual Republicans day to day, but the conservative movement has tried to co-opt patriotism for what to me appear to be entirely cynical ends.
Okay, interesting. Well, Lloyd, before we go, your thoughts on freedom and how it's being represented here?
Well, yeah, the other thing that is hurt, and this wasn't really a Trump issue to be fair, it's more of a Rod DeSantis whole, you know, freedom to read books that you want. So that all, you know, and the other thing I gotta say about Trump, now again, as an old school Republican, I believe in supply and demand, the marketplace. Wasn't it Trump who said he wanted to limit interest, like credit card interest rates?
Right.
You know, I knew he was a socialist at heart. I mean, this is, so there's a lot of inconsistencies. You're going to find that, you know, Democrat, Republican. I just had to laugh when I heard that one.
Well,
yeah,
there's...
No, I'm with you. No, he's not a... Trump is a small government only when it's to his benefit.
Well, I agree with that.
Exactly.
When it's to his benefit.
Well, yeah. One of the reasons that I'm going to take advantage of the ability to vote my conscience being in Ohio here, because I could not agree with that more. Let's also talk about, while we're at it, his stance on eminent domain and other things like that. So, yeah, he will cynically use the government, as he has many times before. But we'll have to see how this all plays out. But once we get into the new administration, whatever it's going to be, this would clearly be a fun panel to reconstitute. So let's get the gang back together for a subsequent discussion. I enjoyed it so much. I want to thank both of you for being a part of here. Such a great discussion here. Colin, thank you so much for being back on with us.
That was a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I'm sorry I talked over you guys.
No, I did too.
I enjoyed this. This was really a lot of fun, Rick. You always put together a great show.
Thank you. You cut me in, and
I look forward to being back with Colin.
Lloyd, always a pleasure to have you on. I told Colin that you'd have him laughing, and you certainly had us both laughing. You guys are great together, and as well as individually the times I've talked with you. So, yeah, we'll do it again. Thank you both for being here. By the way, and with this going up as mini episode number 1776, we may miss a couple things in the news cycle, because just to say, we're going live to tape on Wednesday night here, so we can get 1775, the football segment, in first to make it all line up. So for anybody out there that's asking me, how come you didn't have anything in there about Tim Walz punching a guy in a MAGA hat with brass knuckles? Because it hadn't happened yet when we recorded. Okay? It hadn't happened yet when we recorded. I couldn't anticipate that. But thank you guys both so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1776.